Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, Rita Peters, along with my co-host, Mark Meckler. He's the Convention of States president, and I just love having Mark as my co-host for the show. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing great, and I love being here with you as well. I mean, it's really nice to do something other than straight up politics all day long, so I love doing Crossroads with you.
Yeah, it's really fun. Well, for our listeners, today is the second in our 10-week series of programs on servant leadership. And Mark, I want to say a few words today about why this material is relevant to our program, Crossroads, Where Faith and Culture Meet. And the fact is, if we as Christians want to impact our culture, we have to understand how to be effective influencers to the people and the world around us. And that's really what this is all about, right?
Yeah, it is. And we talked a little bit last week about what it means to be a servant leader and the idea of helping people to get from here to there, you know, whatever the there is for them, helping them to identify their goals and make that trek and find their path. And that kind of leadership is desperately needed in modern society. It's needed in our personal lives. It's needed, you know, in our families. If you're leading a family, it's needed in your workplace. It's needed in your church. So this is a skill set based in faith that's going to help you be a more effective disciple.
Absolutely. Well, as a reminder to everyone tuning in today, we're walking through the book, Servant Leadership, by David Kuhnert. That's K-U-H-N-E-R-T. We are using the first edition of this book as our guide, but if you'd like to have your own copy of the book, you can purchase the second edition of it on Amazon. And back with us today, folks, to help us walk through chapter 2 of Servant Leadership is Chris Thomas, who is a mentor and coach on this whole topic. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Rita. You can actually even buy the first edition as well. You can go to the self-publishing house where it's published, authorhouse.com, I think it is, or maybe it's authorhouse.org. But if you just search Authorhouse Servant Leadership, David Kuhnert on Google, you'll find that. Or you could find the first edition on Amazon. You just got to make sure you buy the edition with the black cover, not the blue cover. But I'm so glad to be back with you guys. It was great talking with you last week, and I can't wait to our discussion today.
And on the topic of buying the book, I would encourage you, if you have any interest in this topic at all, to pick up a copy of the book. It is extremely easy to read and practical. It's not dense. It, you know, doesn't use a bunch of hard language. It's pretty short. The chapters are short, and it's just really practical and easy to read. So pick up a copy.
So chapter 2 is about goal setting. And the two theres, if you weren't with us last week, the way we determine a there is that there is basically a goal. And the author, Dave Kuhnert, references Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. So this chapter introduces the concept of what we call SMART goals. And this is a specific way to lay out your goal. SMART is an acronym. So Chris, why don't you tell us about SMART goals?
Well, before I get in that, I love that Proverbs that he starts this chapter out with. And one of the stories I like to tell to our classes when I teach it is about when I was a college ministry director years and years and years ago with a mentor of mine that is also actually a mentor of Mark's, Carlo Wolf. And we would occasionally go to a larger worship service every week that a huge college ministry in town would throw probably once a quarter or twice a year or something like that. We'd go to join it just to give our kids something more energetic to be a part of. And one time we went and the pastor got up and said, you know, I didn't prepare anything this week because I really wanted the Spirit to speak through me. And that irked me really badly because I know that if I get up unprepared, far more of Chris is likely to come through because I haven't spent the time in diligent seeking of God's truth and God's word and his Spirit to work in me. And so I know that if I get up and I just speak extemporaneously, it's going to be more likely to come from me and I'm going to make mistakes than if I diligently plan and let the Lord work on my heart. And I think God wants us to diligently seek him in everything we do. So SMART goals are a way of us really being diligent about the aspects of our life. There's so much that we do that is just super unintentional. And if we can learn to use SMART goals in our everyday life, and we can be much more intentional about what we do, therefore more diligent about what we do, and we can learn to even make our goals even more specific. So SMART stands for specific, measurable, achievable. And there are some people out there may have heard it as relevant. The way that David talks about it in servant leadership is results oriented. Now, that's language that comes out of the Army's use of SMART goals, is from my understanding of it, as I've done a little research there. But it essentially means the same thing. The results are intended to be relevant to the mission you're trying to accomplish, the overarching transcendent there, or a bigger goal that you're serving with a smaller SMART goal. And so that R means, is it going to produce results towards that end, or is it going to be irrelevant to what we're doing? And then T is time bound. So making sure that there is actually a time frame that you want to get the goal done in. So those five things is what SMART stands for. And I think that they've been incredibly helpful to our grassroots as people have learned them.
So SMART goals, that just to review, that's S, specific, M, measurable, A, acceptable or achievable, R, results oriented, and T, time bound. So that sounds great, Chris, but it's still super abstract. Maybe you could walk us through an example so we can get a good feel for what that actually looks like.
I might decide that I want to create a SMART goal to improve my fitness. And I might say that I want to get 8 hours of sleep a night and discipline myself to go to bed at a certain time and wake up at a certain time every single day. And I'm going to do it for 30 days to try to create a habit out of it. So my specific is, I want to get into a habit of sleeping 8 hours from X time to Z time every single day for 30 days. Measurable. Yeah, I can actually keep a journal and I can write down what time I lay down to go to bed. I have a sleep tracker on my smartwatch. And so I usually wear that to bed and I can track my sleep. And so I can measure whether or not I got 8 hours of sleep that night. And I can set an alarm to wake up at the time that I'm trying to wake up at. And I can see my progress as I track that in a journal throughout the 30 days. So it's measurable. Is it achievable? Yeah, I think it's achievable to be able to sleep 8 hours a night, hopefully. Maybe Mark and you and Rita, maybe it's a little harder because the two of you are crazy busy and your schedules are insane. I can't even imagine what your sleep schedules look like, but it has been actually a goal of mine to try to get better disciplined sleep. And then results oriented, it serves the bigger goal that I want to be healthier, that I want to have a lifestyle that's more imbalanced, that I am treating all aspects of my life in a healthy way. Is it time bound? Yeah, 30 days. I'm trying to do it for 30 days with the goal, a longer goal of it being a habit that sticks with me after that, right? So that would be an example of how you would set a SMART goal that would allow you to then diligently seek after it.
I see. And before we move on from this, because I think this concept is super important, but it actually takes a lot of thought, I think, to make sure that a goal you're setting is a SMART goal. Can you give an example of a goal that's not a SMART goal because it fails to meet one of those criterion? And what's the problem with setting a goal that doesn't meet those criteria?
So I do this exercise with our classes, every class that I teach with servant leadership and convention of states. And I ask people to come prepared, willing to share their SMART goal for convention of states. And we often have what we call a district captain, which is kind of our broadest level of leadership within convention of states. They're the people that lead teams within their congressional district, within their state. And they are oftentimes very new when they join and get encouraged to come and join a servant leadership class. And so they oftentimes come and their SMART goal is build my team. And the problem with that is that it's not a specific goal. They might even get more specific and they might say, I want to build a team of 10 in the next 2 months. But Mark, help me think through this a little bit. What do you think is missing in the specificity of build my team of 10 in the next 2 months? What could they be more specific on?
So there's a lot of stuff in there. I don't know what they mean by build my team.
Yeah.
Right. So specifically, what are they looking for on their team? Are they looking for volunteers? Are they looking for people who will help them with communication, people who go to the legislature, So they could be a lot more specific about what their team means and also what it means to build my team. In other words, does that mean have people sign a petition? Does it mean have people come to a meeting with them or agree to a certain set of activities? It just really lacks specificity. At the end, the question would be, have you built your team? And they won't really be sure because they don't really know what the team is.
Perfect. Mark pointed out quite a few things that were wrong with that goal, that it's not specific about what building my team is. So you don't even actually know how to measure your goal then at the end of it, right? And then you're also missing probably about 10 or 15 specific steps that you should do before you try to quote unquote build your team of 10. Let's say that their goal actually is to recruit 10 people to be active on their district team. And that's what they mean by build their team. Well, what is it going to take for you to recruit 10 people from your district? Do you know the numbers? Do you know how many people that you need to call to get to show up to a live event, to get face-to-face time with, and how many people you need to have in a face-to-face meeting before you can get one person to commit to volunteering? Is it 100 people or is it 1,000 people? How many people do you need to call to invite? And then how many people do you need to get to this event? So a step that you need to go back even more specific to serve that bigger goal is I need to find out from other more experienced district captains in my state and in my region, maybe, what are the numbers there? How many people do I need to call? Now you have something a little bit more concrete to work with to figure out whether or not this goal is actually achievable. Because if it takes you 1,000 phone calls to get 50 people to show up to a local library and hear about Convention of States, and then one of those 50 people signed up, then you're not building a team of 10 in 2 months. That's impossible because you're not going to call. I mean, do the multiplication, right? You're not going to call 10,000 people in 2 months. So you have to know what the most effective tools are going to be and what it's going to cost you in your time and your effort to reach that goal, to even determine whether it's achievable. So by skipping all the lead up steps to the goal, you're not only not being specific enough, you can't even determine if it's achievable. And then you can't measure it. You can't realize if the time set that you've given to it is realistic or not. Maybe you need to stretch it out to having a 6 months or 7 months or 8 months to do that, because as you build more people on your team, you multiply your ability to make phone calls and make those connections. And so you need to maybe stretch your goal longer so that you can make it actually achievable. You need to give yourself a bigger time frame. So that's where a smart goal wouldn't really be smart, is when you haven't thought through all those specific steps and be very specific about what your goal is, so that you can determine how you're going to measure it, so that you can determine whether it's achievable and what time frame you need for it to actually be achievable.
That's really helpful. That fleshes it out a good bit. Mark and Chris, I want to throw this question out to both of you because you are both leaders with a ton of experience in leading and managing other people and entire teams of people. In your experience, what are some of the most common reasons people fail to meet their goals? And does it have to do with the goal they set is not a smart goal to begin with, or is it just they fail to follow through? What are some of the most common reasons people don't meet their goals? Mark, I'll have you go first on this one.
Yeah, I would say the most common is that it's not a smart goal. And so you get people that set very non-specific goals. To be super general about it, somebody says, I want to be way better at my job. You know, what does that mean to be better at your job? Are there particular skills you need? By when are you going to be better at your job? Is this something you can actually do? So that sort of fails in all regards. People do this in their personal lives too. I see this all the time in regard to fitness. People say, you know, I want to lose weight. How much weight? By when? Can you really lose that much weight by that time? So I think the failure to set it out as a SMART goal is one thing. I would say a second thing, and this is not necessarily whether it's a SMART goal or not, but it's, do you announce your goal to other people? Are you accountable to somebody else? Because I think some people can do them on their own. And over time, if you get really good at this, I think you can. But telling, for example, your spouse and your kids and your friends, look, I'm going to lose 50 pounds by Christmas, that makes you much more accountable to other people. And specifically, if you say to them, please hold me accountable. If you see me doing things that don't seem to fit that goal, let me know. So I would say accountability partners and the idea that you put it out there. Setting a goal, literally, frankly, is just a dream until you take action. and until you share it with other people, because that's what really puts you on the spot to get it done, in my opinion.
That's good. Good insight. Chris, how about you and your experience? What are some of the common reasons people fail to meet their goals?
Well, I want to jump off of something Mark said, because actually David talks about one of the aspects Mark said in the book. He says, research shows that if we make a goal in our minds, we only have about a 20% chance of accomplishing it. If we take the time to actually just write our goals down, our chance of accomplishing the goal goes up approximately 42%. If we write it down and then share it with somebody, we have a 62% chance of actually doing it. However, if we write it down and then share it with somebody and then have them intentionally invite them to check back in, that's the accountability part Mark talked about, it goes up to 76% chance that you would accomplish that goal. So totally, most people, first of all, aren't intentional enough about their lives. They go through life very unintentional. I'm one of the biggest guilty parties of this. And so setting goals is a way of being intentional about your life, but then being even more intentional about your goal, to write it down, to share it with somebody, inviting accountability is a huge thing. But I would say one of the biggest things I think people make a mistake on is that they don't understand the achievable aspect. I think all of us think we're superhuman, and I'm a chief violator of the fact that I'm not a superhuman. I have been learning, I've been on a journey for the last few years of learning to live into my limitations better and understand that I'm a limited creature and I can't do everything. And I can't just brute force everything to work, because at some point or another, some aspect of my life is going to fall apart. When I brute force all of my goals at work to make sure that I can do everything that really wasn't achievable in the first place, then what I do? I neglect my wife and my family and my health and my spiritual life, and all of that falls apart. Right. And so there's only so much we can do. So we have to be very, very intentional about it. And we have to set goals that are really achievable. I read a book, actually, our whole mentoring team read a book recently that we loved, and I highly recommend. It's called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And we recommended it to a lot of the other staff. And so a lot of our Convention Estates staff are actually reading the book now. But one of the things he talks about in it is making very small goals that stack onto habits that you already have, even bad habits that you already have. You want to quit smoking and you would rather walk for, you know, half an hour every day instead of take your smoke break. Well, instead of making that your goal, quitting smoking and taking a walk for half an hour a day, make it so that you put your walking shoes on when you have a craving to smoke. Just the first step towards taking a walk. It's not necessarily that you do this huge goal of taking a walk. You're just taking that first little step, that entry that has almost no barrier. And then you begin a new craving, a new cue that comes out of that putting your shoes on. You know, I put my shoes on now. He tells the story in the book. There was a guy that wanted to exercise every day, but he knew he couldn't get himself up to go to the gym to exercise every day for half an hour or whatever. So he decided he was going to put on his gym clothes, drive to the gym, walk in the doors, turn around, walk back out. And he did it for about a month. And then he finally, at about 30 days, he walked in and said, I've been doing this every day for 30 days. I'm here. I might as well just work out. And he had created a whole new habit just by creating a no barrier to entry goal for himself. And so that idea of creating small, very achievable goals is so powerful, because they can get you on the road to the bigger goal that you want to. You just got to realize that it takes smaller steps to get there. So I think that's probably the biggest mistake most people make.
So last week we talked about the difference between regular goals, where we apply our SMART goals, and transcendent goals. And Kuhner talks about in the book that really, you can't have a SMART goal set up on a transcendent goal. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, because that transcendent goal is that North Star. It is going to be the thing that you test all of your goals that are SMART goals against. So there are a lot of good things in this world. But if I say yes to everything, I'm not living into that limited nature that I have, right? And I'm not going to actually be able to do everything well. So that transcendent goal helps me to realize, is this actually something that heads me in that direction of my North Star? And if it isn't, if it's something that it's not in my value system and it isn't a part of my priorities, isn't a part of that transcendent there, then I need to say no to it. I need to not do it. So you can't really have a SMART goal set up with the transcendent there, because the transcendent there is never complete. And a SMART goal should always be completable. It always should be able that you can wrap it up and you're done and it's finished, right? So that's why, for example, my sleeping example that I gave, I want to do this very rigidly and keep a journal for 30 days. Am I going to keep doing that after that? No, not necessarily. Do I hope to keep sleeping for 8 hours a night after those 30 days? Yes, because I want it to be a habit at that point, right? And maybe I need to set a new SMART goal after that if I don't feel like it is a habit. But it's going to be completed. That goal itself is going to be completed at the end of 30 days. And I'm going to be able to look back and measure, did I do this or not? So a transcendent goal just can't be measured like that because of its nature of being that North Star, that guiding star, that directional goal that helps you to go in the same direction your whole life.
Now, Chris, the chapter goes on to talk about the two theirs. And last week in chapter one, we were introduced to the whole concept of the there here path, how to get there from wherever my here is. And now we're hearing about the two theirs. What are the two theirs?
There. It could get really confusing, right? Yeah. And we actually have recognized this as a part of our teaching of this to our grassroots, is this can get confusing to people. So we've begun to change the language of this from the two theirs to talking about a we-centered focus or a me-centered focus. And that's really what it's about. A lot of people get stuck on the actions that are described often when David is talking about the two theirs, but he's really actually describing motivations. And so I like to talk about it like this. You might have two people who donate a lot of money to a lot of charities in their local town, but one of them does it because they like their name to be in the newspaper. They like to have their names on plaques everywhere, and they like to have the tax write-offs. Right? There's a me-centered focus in what they're doing. And that's what David calls a me there, because their motivation is all about themselves. The other person who gives, they don't care what accolades they get. They don't care what comes back to them. They give purely out of a generosity and wanting to see the various charities in their town grow and have what they need to be able to help people. And that's a we-centered focus. That is a we there, is what David would call that. And so the motivation there is that the all of us benefit out of this activity, not just me, right? And they're not going to be rejecting of accolades. Like if somebody wants to put their name on a paper, that person's not going to be conscientious of it because their purpose is for the whole. They're not trying to be fakely humble. They're trying to genuinely help other people. So it's about the motive there. And you can have the opposite happen, right? So if you have a volunteer working with you in your church, or if you have a volunteer working with you in an organization like Convention Estates, and you have two different volunteers and both of them quit, well, one of them could quit because they've made a bunch of suggestions that just aren't in line with the mission of whatever you guys are doing, and they're not getting their way. So they're being selfish and they're quitting out of a me-centered focus, a me there. Or the other person who quits because they are having some health issues and they feel like they're not doing the job that they've signed up for very well. And they feel like they're holding the team back and they're holding up a spot. And so why pretend like I'm actually doing something for this team? I know I can't. And so if I relinquish my role, somebody else can be recruited to fill it who could probably do it better than me. And that's a we-centered focus. That's a we there, because their heart is for the team, not just for themselves. So the actions themselves mean nothing, because they can be identical but have two different focuses, two different motivations behind them. And what a servant leadership role needs to always be as somebody who's serving the we all the time, which is really important when we go back to that definition of servant leadership. The servant leadership definition David gives us is that we are influencing people to get there. Well, if we're influencing people to get there, that's a self-centered, self-serving, self-focused there, is that servant leadership? No. Inherent to servant leadership is a we-centered focus, that there is serving the very person that you're leading and serving others by leading them to that point. And maybe you get served as well, but that's not the center of the focus. It's the team. It's the whole that is benefiting out of this. So it's so important understanding these two motivations, the we there and the me there, or what we like to say, the we-centered focus or the me-centered focus, for evaluating, am I doing this out of a heart of servant leadership, or am I doing this out of some other kind of heart?
Yeah, I think this is not easy, to be honest with you, is that we always have to be self-reflective. And that's a very hard thing for human beings to do. Am I being me, or am I being we focused? Sometimes I think that's hard to look at yourself and understand that. So I also think bringing in your friends and your family and asking them that question, I feel like I should do this thing, am I being me or we focused, is helpful. Now, in the book, Kuhnert quotes Galatians 5:16-26 to illustrate the point. Can you flesh that out for us a little bit?
Yeah, Galatians is talking about walking in the flesh versus walking in the spirit, which is essentially exactly what we just talked about, right? Paul says that our example for how we are to do everything is Christ. And Christ lived his life with that we focus. He never did anything with a me focus. In fact, the one time that we even see him even remotely kind of acknowledge a me-centered focus is when he falls in the Garden of Gethsemane and says, "Lord, if there's any other way, take this cup from me." But he immediately surrenders in a we-centered focus. He says, "But not my will, your will be done," right? And so Paul, when he's talking about walking in the flesh versus walking in the spirit in Galatians chapter 5, he's essentially pouring out for us what the fruits of somebody who lives a life that's we-centered versus me-centered or other-centered even as he talks about it in Philippians. And so he talks about the fruit of the spirit. He talks about the fruits of the flesh, that they're evident. So when you see these fruits in people, you can tell where they're operating out of, because that kind of spirit that you have, whether it's a self-centered spirit or an other-centered spirit, will always produce fruit in its kind. So if you see in somebody love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, you know, that whole list, self-control, what's another word for self-control, Mark? Maybe our organization might be named after it.
Yeah, self-governance.
Self-governance, right? A very biblical, very, very godly principle. There's no law against these things, he says, right? If you see those things in somebody, then you can be guaranteed they're working out of a selfless or an others-centered or a we-centered focus, not a self-centered focus. So I think that's kind of why he brings in Galatians and why he connects it into that particular topic, is to bring up that motive aspect of it, that it's about your heart. And Mark, I also want to tie into something else that you actually said. You made a comment about it's very difficult to be self-reflective. This is actually something that David acknowledges in every single chapter of the book. And he does it subtly, but it's so powerful. And I try to bring people to be aware of it, because what we find in our classes, and I find it in me, when I read this book for the first like 4 times, it was very easy for me to take these principles and immediately start applying to everybody else in my life, right? Yeah. That person over there is in the victim circle. That person over there is, you know, not being in the freedom bee. Like, I'm starting to take all these principles. You guys don't know what those mean yet. You will at the end of this 10 weeks. But I'm starting to apply it to everybody else around me. The reality is David in every chapter tells you that this principle is first and foremost applied in your own heart. It's first and foremost applied to you, because you have no control over anybody else. You have to only exert the control you have over yourself by being self-reflective and making sure you're intentional about these aspects. So we remind that to our grassroots too, is that these are principles that you don't enforce on other people, although they are good management principles. And once you've gotten them down in your own life, you can begin to practice them with other people in healthy ways. But the first place you apply them as you're learning them is to your own life and constantly in self-evaluation.
I just can't help but think our country, our world would look very differently if we had a bunch of servant leaders impacting our culture. Would you guys agree with that?
I would say right now in our society, we live in a culture that promotes the exact opposite. It's a form of hedonism, right? It's what should I buy right now that will please me? What will make me look better? What will elevate me? What will give me momentary fame on the internet? Instead of looking around you and saying, what can I do to elevate others? How can I serve others? How can I serve my family? How can I serve my church or my community, my kids' school? And so it is a completely different focus. And we're not elevating those ideas of serving others in our society very well right now. But I'm very hopeful, because it's not difficult to do if you just change your orientation about what it actually means to be a leader.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to have to be the last word. Chris, Thomas, thanks for being with us again, and we'll have you back again next week for part 3. I want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren. Thank you all for listening. And if you'd like to make a donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Rita Peters with Mark Meckler, Chris Thomas today, and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.